Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey everybody, this is Greg with the Brothers Wiss number 73. This is the real number 73, not like that last one that we recorded and then right at the end it was an amazing one and my hard drive crashed. Not like that one. This is the real one this time. I'm coming all the way from Texas, and then up there we got Mikey. Where are you at today, Mikey?
Today I'm actually up at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
That's where they make the mayo, huh?
Yeah. That's where all the different companies have made their condiments.
Condiment
right
factory,
Rochester.
You're doing the whole big tour, huh? That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were so into that stuff. Let me adjust my levels. And then we also have Davey. Where are you at, Dave?
I'm in Long Beach, California.
LBC. You and Snoop D-O double G.
Represent.
Yeah. That's you.
I actually seen Snoop around here. You know, he drives an old beat up white Lexus sedan. I don't even know what model it was. And he saw me looking at him, and I was like, no way, is that really him? And dude, he's tall. He's really, really tall. But yeah, I did see Snoop. I can say I'm from Long Beach, and I did see Snoop.
I've seen Snoop before. No big deal. I saw him at the first concert I ever went to. It was Korn, Snoop Dogg, and Linkin Park.
Wow.
Interesting mix.
That's when he was at his height. I mean, well, kind of after his height, right?
Yeah.
Little after. That's
pretty
cool, though.
A little bit towards the end there, I think. All righty, let's jump in first. Let's get some of the let's eat our vegetables first before we get to the main course and the dessert. So this podcast is, and the one that we didn't air, is brought to you by Sonar. Sonar.software, scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing system. It's actually pretty cool. Most of the guys you see here have touched it or use it. Most of the folks I talk to are using it at this point, or at least looking at it. Let's see, pop over there, sonar.software. Mikey eventually will have to learn how to use it.
My Wisp has been officially on it for about 4 or 5 months now, and I still don't have half of the integrations done because I'm too busy. None of the cool stuff actually works. It just charges people's credit cards and sends them email. I'm partway through, and I've got the idea. I made the contacts to get one of my clients moved over to Sonar. That their old platform is one of the on-site platforms that's people use out there, but it's like really old. It's running on like server 2003. Every day you wonder if they're gonna shut off some cipher that requires you to upgrade your Windows or SQL Server or something. Every day I'm just like, when's this old setup going to die? I need to move before then. And something else happens and it gets put off.
Yeah, nobody runs old stuff in production. That's not how that works, Mike. Stuff that you have to band-aid together and limp along and maybe write scripts to reboot it every couple of days. Nobody ever does that sort of thing.
I'm actually looking at doing that. Some of their DSLAMs, I think they have an SNMP bug in them. And every few weeks, they just stop responding. Sunday night, just reboot the problem ones.
That sounds like a solid solution. Sounds like something I would do.
Is that talking about your G.Fiber stuff or something else?
But no, the ADSL.
Still using that? Wow.
It still works, for lots of people. It still works great, It does 25 megs.
Well, that's still enough for most distance. People. It's dependent on distance, though, right? You can't just be 20 miles away and get 25 megs.
Well, right, yeah. Yeah, no, it, that's, it'll do 25 megs up to probably about 2 miles or so.
Jesus.
And they've got VDSL in some towns, so that'll do 100 meg up to like a half mile.
But you got to put your equipment in a CO, right? You got to put that DSLAM in the CO.
Yeah.
What does it cost about to rent that kind of space?
It's actually not too well. Actually, the space itself is really cheap. The space is like $12 a month per linear foot, so it's like $50 a month for the space for two racks.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you know, but then, you know, everything has a charge, you know?
Yeah.
Like on some of their DS3s, like they're charged for the cable and for the terminations on both sides. So it's like, you know, 2 cents a month for the one termination. Like what? But that's just how, you know, how that's the how tariffs they make their are. Money.
But that's kind of old tech. I remember doing that stuff back in 99 in New York.
Get the,
good
get
to
the,
see it's still rocking.
Yeah, the plan on doing a hundred by hundred meg service though.
And wait, with DSL?
VDSL, yeah. You can do 100 by 100 up to about a half mile.
Wow. Oh, up to a half a mile.
Yeah, that's not too far.
Yeah, you got to live across half a mile coming out of a CO. Isn't that like across the street because of all the wiring that goes on inside the CO?
It like in most places they're at, like, you know, in like rural small towns, say up to town like 1,000, like the entire town will be within like 50 by 50 range.
Oh, okay.
And that's still reasonable speed.
How do you compete with, like, I mean, are these towns that don't have, like, let's say some sort of like a Fios type of thing, either whether it's Frontier or Verizon or cable.
When he's saying like 1,000 or less users, I mean, that's never going to be on the roadmap for, yeah, I mean, because that's probably going to be a brownfield town, right? It's going to be really old. And are they going to, spend all that money to put all that infrastructure in? I can't imagine it would.
So the incumbent is Frontier. And they run all AdTran gear in our area. Most of it's, well, there's some Alcatel. They got some ADSL, some VDSL, but like they're still only delivering like 6 meg internet with their VDSL. Like I don't get it. But you know, Comcast is in some towns, Charter's in some towns, Mediacom's in others, you know, doing, you know, multi-hundred megabit service.
Got it.
But you know, most people don't need more than 50. So you just, you know, most people's problems is not even the internet connection. It's, you know, it's their in-home stuff, or it's the, you know, peering that the ISP does, or it's, you know, it's everything but the last mile connection.
Yep.
I mean, I had a cousin of mine complaining on Facebook a couple of days ago saying, you know, this Suddenlink stuff is crap. I have to reboot my Linksys router every 4 or 5 days. And I replied back, I was like, well, if it's rebooting the router fixes it, it's not Suddenlink, dude. It's your router. How about you tell me what your settings are, and I'll duplicate them on something and mail it to you.
Yeah.
So it's all about perception, right?
Which I guess is a bit of a tangent, but like, you know, I know lots of ISPs that are going into the, you know, managed home router, managed home Wi-Fi stuff, and others that like stay away as far as possible. You know, there's a plug that comes out of their PUE injector, and that's it. You know, that's the DMARC. Anything past that is the user's fault.
Yeah, but try convincing the user that it's their problem. Like, nobody wants to hear that.
Well, sure. Yeah. Like, you know, example, you know, what Greg just said, you know, they're blaming Suddenlink, but their router is the problem.
Yeah.
So I think it behooves people to, you know, there's definitely increased support involved in terms of, you know, wading into the customer's network. But if you have the right equipment in the customer's home, you know, all that information is already available to you. And, you know, you can solve these problems before they become problems and they trash your brand.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely. Look, I don't deliver internet service, but I deliver VoIP, and I deal with the same thing. Sometimes the customer's like, we're having problems with your system, you know, and I'm like, well, hang on a second. Let's see what's going on here. You log into their router. Usually they have a MikroTik. I'll log in. I'll snoop around, look at things, poke around, try to find what's going on. And 99 out of 100 times, it's always something on the customer's end. Now, what you said about peering, we have a big problem in California. If you're on Frontier, now this is after Frontier took over Verizon Fios in California. Mm-hmm. So Verizon Fios in California prior to Frontier was great. And when I mean great, their bandwidth is low latency, very low latency. But after Frontier took over, they still have low latency. But here's the problem. Frontier only peers with one backbone. That's it. Just one. Level 3. And I got to tell you, about, I'd say, 2 years ago, when they initially took over, it was a disaster. I mean, there was latency from just from the Frontier to level 3 peer. Tons of packet loss. And, you know, my customers were like, hey, what's going on? We're getting some jitter. Oh, they don't say jitter, but it sounds like you're underwater. So I had to, I mean, wasn't their network, wasn't my, you know, systems. So we had to come up with some creative ways to try to find a route that goes around the Frontier network. And that was basically impossible because they only have one peer.
I've been actually talking to some of the Frontier peering people, at least in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And over here, they're, you know, they're pretty open to peering. You know, if, you know, of course they have things out of places like in Indianapolis, you know, we wanted them to join our exchange there and they were up to it, except like their IP, you know, like, you know, their major IP pop for the area was in Fort Wayne. Like, I mean, it's not a tiny town, but it's not the dominant town in the state. I'm like, why, you know, why is that? But no, it's, looking here.
Yeah, why is that a problem?
Well, so like they didn't want to come to us and we didn't want to go to them. And so, you know, they're, you know, here's where our network is. It's just not in an area where people are, you know, it's all, you know, it's all telco stuff. It's not, you know, internet. Topology, but no, it's for the ASN they had out here, they're actually on the NE2 exchange in LA, so maybe you have a different ASN out there, but
or maybe it's just during the transition, because I know Frontier took over old Verizon here in my area, and there was it was a little hairy for a while they were switching things over.
Okay,
so something else you were talking about is you said that you have customers calling and complaining. Something quick and dirty I've done for some people is like if you do have a MikroTik router, you can go to tools graphing and then just turn on interface graphing, and then they can hit the web page and actually see kind of their bandwidth graphs right in the router. So it'll, you know, if you don't want to like spin up an NMS and do all that stuff, or if they can't do that, then they can just log into their MikroTik and see, oh yeah, I'm maxing out my internet connection. That could probably be part of the problem.
The shitty thing about the graph is that the lowest you could set it to is every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you're really pinning it, you're not going to see too many spikes. But, you know, look, again, the customer, God, I don't know any nice way to say this. Some customers, they just, they're like deer in headlights. They don't want to know what the reason is. They want you to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, and in some instances that could be just unrealistic.
Well, I'm paying you for this service. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Come on. And it's their ISP, you know, so how do you explain that to them? They don't give a crap. Yeah. So what I had to do is I had to do some funny stuff in my data center to get from the customer in Southern California to my data center without going through some funky routes. And that was a real stressful time because I was very limited on what I could do. But thank God didn't lose anyone and Frontier kind of took care of it. But actually I want to see right now, I'm going to do a trace route just out to yonder. See if we're still going through that same level 3 peer that always has packet loss. Maybe they just drop ICMP, but I'm curious. But anyway,
so while Dave's looking that up,
duke it out.
I wanted to read off, we have a few new patrons. We've got Adir Winter, Marit Sinner, and Colin Zapolik. I know I just murdered those names, well, except for, you know, the first one. But those patrons have access to our Little Brothers with Slack only channel. So just for those patrons, they can pop in and take a look at all of that stuff. We've got a pretty lively group in there, a lot of good discourse. So some of the notes on here are actually stuff that we ran into on the Slack. And I've learned a lot from these guys. It's a really good kind of subset of different people. You know, everybody's got their own expertise in there, so it's fun. You guys should drop in. It's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. And it paid for that microphone, and it paid for that microphone. So we're actually we're putting it to good use. We're actually upgrading our equipment slowly but surely. So
soon we'll open up a school for underprivileged children and make it completely free.
School for kids who don't read good and want to learn how to.
Wow. I got that reference. Yeah, all there right.
You go. I know I butchered that, but there you go.
Hey, I think you did it right, Zoolander.
Cool. So
by the way, that hop or that pier right there between frontiernet.net and level 3 is still experiencing 65% packet loss. Now, because there's no jitter on my customers, I have to imagine that they're not allowing ICMP or just very low priority on the totem pole ICMP, because there is definitely packet loss, at least according to the traceroute I'm doing. But again, no jitter. So something's going on there that I don't think any one of us are going to have visibility to. Mike, you have some contacts over at Level 3 in Frontier. Why don't you give him a call? Be like, hey, what's going on here?
Because it's not his stuff that's having problems, so I didn't care.
Yeah, they're not, I'm going to assume it's just they probably have an old router that does not have a very powerful processor for the control plane. And so, you know, the forwarding plane is, you know, passing your data along just fine. But because it's, you know, pinging the router itself is going up into the control plane. And it's, if it's an older router, it's probably like a, you know, Celeron 400 instead of a, you know, 12-core Xeon or something.
It could be. I mean, they could be policing that ICMP pretty tight at that peering point, though. You know, it's sort of on the border and untrusted or whatever.
Like right now, it is perfect. No packet loss. Zero for the past, I'd say, 20 seconds. And then it'll just start up again. So who knows what's going on there. But bottom line is they only have one peer, which is kind of ridiculous for such a big ISP to have. I mean, shouldn't they have at least, you know, two at the very least?
I'll say offline, but I'll tell people how they can do it. Take a look at
Looking Glass.
Ripe. I can't remember the name of the project that Ripe has now. Ripe Atlas project. Mm-hmm. You could choose like 1,000 different devices to do a trace route to that device from. And you could look at all the trace routes across the internet and see if maybe there's, you know, other avenues to get in. You're just not seeing. Perhaps Frontiers is just preferring level 3 in this case, but you know,
for the
you
past know, could 3 years, from every single one of my customers in Southern California.
To be fair, Frontier doesn't do things very quickly.
That's so if they wanted to change accurate.
They've been doing all these acquisitions and stuff, and that I don't know it I think I've noticed at least like through the level 3 Time Warner acquisition and then the subsequent CenturyLink level 3 acquisition, if it ain't broke they don't fix it. You know what I mean? They've got so many irons in the fire during those times that if something's like sort of working, they just don't touch it and you know, just put out fires over here and there. And so
sure yet,
I can imagine yet, I would probably be in the same boat.
At Frontier bought our properties from Verizon 7 years ago, and they're still on the policy of if you can't, like if the purchase doesn't pay for itself within 12 months, they don't do it.
Wow,
which is awfully counter to the old telco mentality of, you know, everything is good for 20 years. You know, now it's if it's not 12 months, you're not buying it. So like, you know, they're only buying enough SFPs for what they think they'll use in a few months. You know, there isn't spare CWDM gear on the shelf. It's just, you know, if they need something, it takes 6 weeks to get it in.
Well, that's a nimble mindset. You know, like we don't know if a year from now we're going to sell or we're going to.
I don't think it's nimble. I think it's they have no money.
Could be that too.
And no, but like they've been like their stock price for a long time was like just going down the toilet. And so it's showing, you know, they keep cutting back on spending to improve their stock price, and it shows in the network.
Yeah.
You know, these guys you know, could be doing 100 meg service in every rural town if they just spent $10,000 per town.
It still kind of blows my mind that anybody is chasing the copper market. You know what I mean? That anybody's buying this old copper in the ground to try and do phone lines.
But it's existing. That's why it still exists. It's there. Use it. You got to think like a businessman at that point, not a network engineer.
Well, no, I mean, think about like after, what was it, Hurricane Sandy that hit kind of the New York area up there? Wasn't that Sandy?
Yeah.
There was a lot of, when I read at the time, there was a lot of copper infrastructure that was just destroyed. And the incumbents said, we're not rebuilding that stuff. You know, they basically said, you know, cell service is so ubiquitous that unless we forcibly have to do that, we're not going to do it. And I think they tried to do some glass into places instead of putting copper in, you know. So
they
did that
in California after every earthquake. They're like, all right, everything is destroyed. Let's replace it with fiber.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's why you would chase that sort of infrastructure. And I guess maybe it's some kind of long-term depreciation play while they buy the market or something like that.
Don't know, but you know what? It's great that, Mike, you have that insight, because I had no idea that that's their kind of motto financially. If we can't get 12-month ROI, we ain't doing it.
That was told to me by somebody at Frontier who requests things to turn up customers. Uh-huh. And like, you know, there's parts of the network in our area where they have zero available strands for their own use. So they can't even convert some of those over to WDM because there are no strands to use to put WDM on.
Damn.
And then they can't get money to put more strands in. So they're waiting for circuits to get turned off so they can sneak some WDM in there.
But I think this whole conversation started as to, well, what do you do when you have a customer that's like, well, your service isn't working, even though it's their infrastructure or their ISP. Now, the ISP one, you have a lot less ability to do anything about. Luckily, where I am, if Frontier sucks, well, then we just call Spectrum. Made Spectrum install. And I've actually done that once with a customer. I said, well, Frontier is having issues, and I don't know when this is going to be fixed. So you know what? I will pay for your Spectrum line, and we can cancel the Frontier line after, and you could take over the account. I actually did that with a customer, and they were very happy that I did. I guess I'm willing to show them that there are options, and I'm not afraid to, you know, go the extra mile.
Sure. There could be a problem with Verizon and Spectrum as options is if you're in New York, where New York has told Spectrum, Charter, you have 60 days to develop a plan to divest your New York operations. Like the state told them 60 days to sell your crap. Because it was as a provision of their, of Charter's acquisition of Time Warner, New York required them to build out 186,000, I think, new locations, like, you know, building out into rural areas, mm-hmm. or, you know, at least rural subdivisions.
Yeah.
And apparently they only built out 54,000, and then they lied about it. And in the state, I guess the first time ever that a government body has held, you know, a corporate acquisition and merger to the conditions they set. Normally it's, we just say these nice things and then, you know, forget to check in when they're due. But, you know, that's a big deal for Charter to have to divest all of their state of New York operations.
Jesus. Well, I'm from New York and I have earned the right to say fuck New York. That's why I'm not there anymore. I don't like their tactics. I don't like their policies. I think the state is ran by ex-mafia, because when they come after you, man, they know how to shake you down. I'm still getting letters today for a company that I had in New York like 8 years ago. 8 years ago. I still get letters. And they're like, you owe this much money. I'm like, no, I fucking don't. That company was closed in 2010. You know, it's like, so I can't say anything more about New York without getting a lot more vulgar.
Could be all those loans I took out in your name. I mean... It had something to do with it.
Where's our money? Mm-hmm. Next week, it's your thumbs.
All right, you guys ready to talk about a little bit of hardware?
We can move on to the first item on our list.
All right.
A half hour into the call.
Yeah, there we go. Microtik 4011 first look. I'm not even sure who got a hold of these pictures, and I don't know any of the stats about this gear at this point, but looking at it, it looks close to the old form factor. I mean, the case, it's got a redesign. It actually looks pretty slick, pretty cool.
Do we have a block diagram? Could somebody post a block diagram?
I don't think there's much of any information on this thing yet. It's got 10 ports that appear to all be gig, PoE in on one port and PoE out on 10. It does have an SFP cage. And looking at the picture, it's a little blurry, but it almost looks like it says SFP plus. Is that what it says on there, Mike?
I'm trying to pull up the post where one of the Andrews actually provided some information.
I think Thrifty did. If looking at it, it's got four external antennas, some paddle antennas, probably what, like
look at that.
3 to 6 dB on those guys. When you pop open the case, I think Andrew was saying that the processor, they actually bottom mounted it and it's cast aluminum, the case is, and so it makes contact directly with the case to act as a heat sink. Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's, I think I made some smart comment like, you know, that's cool. Well, that's pretty cool.
Let's get some specs on this. Could he provide any Oh, actually, what's that in the back?
Terrible.
It looks like some sort of a port in the back right behind the SSD. Just a console that's like
a... So what I copied from the Microtik-RouterOS.com Facebook page, which is unofficial.
Yeah, that's Cox's page, I think.
Yeah, he said that its official model number is the RB4011IGS+5HACQ2HND-IN.
Love
and
it.
Actually, I actually read that. I didn't just throw numbers out there. But looking at all those things, I've seen them in other Microtik products. Those are probably all legit. But what's known so far is one SFP plus, 10 gig E, a quad chain 5 gig. They're assuming AC wave 2 and console and power connectors at the rear.
It also looks like it has some sort of a slot, and it's not a PCIe slot. It looks like that's a it almost looks like an M.2 slot. You see that?
Yeah, right next to the one that R11. Has the R11E installed, is that you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, that chip is in there. Oh, okay, so something's actually in there. Interesting. Yeah. All right.
Thrift chimed in later saying that the processor is an Annapurna Labs ARM processor, likely the same as the RB1100AH by 4.
That's a lot of kick packed into a little box. That's pretty cool. I wonder what the price point's going to be around the $100 mark. That's what the other ones are, right?
I think a third of them was maybe closer to $200, but still, you know, in the $100-$200 area, I would say.
I just bought two. They're $150 a piece on the high end.
Okay.
But the 2011, 3011, they were always, you know, a little over $100 to, I guess, the 3011 is like $150. So I would imagine this is going to stick close to the same price point. I mean, it has to be more than the 3011. Otherwise, why would anybody get a 3011?
Well, you know? At this point, I'm assuming they can just appreciate the 2011s.
Oh, yeah.
Let those things go.
They had a lot of problems.
Well, the 2011s had, what, 5 gig ports and then 5 100 meg ports? So
yeah, on two different switch chips. And
yeah, they were split in between. But and then the 3011, didn't they have split switch chips as well as first 5 and last 5?
Yes, they did too.
Okay. Yeah, yes, did. But those were... Those,
it was something different.
Those were all 1 gig, but they did have... So the one switch chip had 2 gigs back to the CPU, and the other one was either 1 or 2, depending on if you used the SFP port or not.
Right, because the SFP gets like its own dedicated lane. If it's enabled, right?
Yeah. So this one has an SFP plus, so it's obviously not going to share with the standard gig. But Thrift was having problems with the USBs on the 3011s. And I don't see any USBs in these pictures.
So maybe it's on. Is there a micro USB?
I mean, like, I don't see any USB on. Like, there's no other USB connectors at the edge of the board.
There's four pin headers right at the back. Maybe that's maybe it's solder your own USB.
Those four pin at the 7-inch mark.
Yeah,
that looking at.
That's probably. Those are the antennas. I'm talking about like at the 4-inch mark. That's probably a JTAG port for programming or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I see that now. Yeah. I guess they could have like a pigtail or something go to one, but I don't see one otherwise. So maybe they solved his USB problem by removing the USB.
What USB
problem?
Broken? Remove USB. No, not broken.
That happened with their forum when you can actually select the number of pages and then download all the pages as a PDF. I was writing to MicroTik for a while. I'm like, that feature doesn't work. It stopped working. I like it. It stopped working. And they're like, okay, fixed. And it's not on the website anymore. So, yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I got to say, I'm really impressed with what MicroTik's doing with all their new little routers and stuff. They're all coming, well, a lot of them are coming with encryption chips. Even the caps are coming with encryption chips. It's really... really, pretty impressive. For
yeah,
such
I think they've started cost. Using better chipsets to just have that hardware offload, right? Like the Hex. Now, I've been impressed with the Hex S. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's got the SFP cage. I think it's got the hardware offload.
It does.
It's got the SD card slot, the micro one. I guess for the dude or something. But I like those little boxes. I'm gonna keep probably a handful of those in my car all the time just in case.
What about the HAPAC squared? I mean, that was the first really nice. Low cost one that had an encryption chip in there, and they're pretty impressive for what it is.
Yeah, a lot of CPU in those things.
Oh yeah, for what they are, it's pretty awesome. But you know, just want to circle back when you said that you want to have some sort of way of managing customers their CPE. Didn't Thomas Kurnack have something to that effect? A portal that the customer could log into with, I don't think it was Unimus, but did he have something or someone have something where the customer could just log in to a portal which has like a very...
Would it be maybe Cox's Bright Wi-Fi?
I don't know that. I've been working with a partner of mine, and looks like we finally shook something loose. He's been really busy on something akin to that, so hopefully we'll get some more traction. I was hoping we'd already have kind of a beta out at this point, but it's just sort of a private beta on ours. So I don't even want to talk about it so far from production at this point. It feels like anyway.
Give us an idea. Come on. Let's hear what's the idea. Or is it top secret?
No. I don't want to talk about it. I'll talk about it later.
All right.
All right. Fine. Let's keep trucking. So next on the list was the Wireless Y MTU issue. Mike had brought this one up based on a forum post he saw. In a nutshell, what was that about?
It was if you sent a packet larger than the MTU was configured for on the wireless interface, the link would drop. So and instead of bouncing the packet, it would...
That's going to be the WAP 60s or the LHG 60s, right? The 60 gigahertz stuff.
Yeah, and I think there was actually like a couple different, when you dug down into the weeds, there's a couple different issues, and I think they already have one of them fixed in NRC. I think they're still working on the other one.
Yeah, because the latest RC, they did say something about that. But then this sort of led into another discussion about MicroTik's wireless stuff, and for the most part, the largest MTU can have, Layer 2 MTU, is 1600, so you can't actually do jumbo frames across a MicroTik wireless link.
Yeah, I believe their competitors can. I'll have to double check on that.
Again, it comes back to what's your definition of jumbo frame, right? Some people say anything over like 1520 is considered jumbo. So 1600 would technically be jumbo in that instance. But to me, jumbo is somewhere close to the, 9,000 mark?
It, yeah. Yeah. It, Yeah, it's, I think I've heard someone say, and of course there's no authoritative body on this, but, you know, 9,000 plus is jumbo. Anything less is, you know, say down to maybe 2,000 to 4,000 is mini jumbo. And under that is, you haven't done enough to you know, merit the badge.
And when we're talking about MTU, we're talking about maximum transmission unit. So how large a packet can be to traverse this link on a layer 3 device. And this feels like deja vu because we talked about this before, but on a layer 3 device, if you go through a router and the MTU is too big, the router should be able to fragment it, right? It should be able to chop it up into bits smaller and then transmit it across. Or if it's got the do not fragment bit set in the packet header, it can drop it and send back an ICMP message telling them, hey, you need to readjust because the link, you know, the MTU is, this is the max here. But on a layer 2 link, if you try and violate the MTU, there is no fragmentation. There is no ICMP that comes back. The packet just magically disappears, which is unfortunate. So before we were talking about when is an instance where you would want a true jumbo frame, like a 9,000 MTU, Mike, when would you want to use that?
So a non-service provider use would be for storage networks, you know, going in between, you know, your SAN and your, you know, and your application servers or your virtual hosts. And why a service provider should care about that simply is, you know, you may be wanting to, you know, sell $35 residential accounts all day. Don't forget there's enterprises in your area that sometimes have these needs, and they'll gladly pay you thousands of dollars for a connection that does what they want. I'd rather serve, you know, 10 $1,000 a month customers than, you know, 100 or, you know, 600, you know, $30 a month customers. It's just.
Gotcha. So like a use case would be you've got a customer that's got business A here. They've got business B over there. You're doing transport and they want to do offsite replication overnight, right? Between the two.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, yeah, whether it's, you know, going horizontally in your network, you're just, you know, from one site to another, or perhaps, you know, you're probably going to a data center somewhere for your internet, you know, they could have, you know, their own cage there or something, for their disaster recovery.
But also on a more, I guess on a technical level, doesn't larger MTUs mean less IRQs to the CPU, so you get less CPU usage?
Yeah, I think I've seen some studies show like 10% lower CPU just by switching from 1500 to 9000. Now obviously it's going to vary based upon workload and what the system is and, you know, 600 different factors, but
theoretically, I mean, the less, yeah. The less frames and packets go through, the less your CPU has to decide what is this, what do we do with it, where do we send it. So
yeah, well, I guess. Think about it like this too. Whenever you're looking at what router board to get and you go to microtit.com/ whatever it is now, and you're looking at their bandwidth test, they always show you like this is what it looks like with 64 K bytes, you know, 64 bytes, and then blah blah blah, and then up to 1500, right? And so the larger the frames get or the packet sizes get, the more throughput you get through the device, right? So what's an instance where you'd want to elevate the MTU, right? So the default MTU going across, say, the internet is 1500, and in your network, why would you ever need to have anything higher, say 1520 or 1550?
If you're running MPLS, running, you know, which, you know, some people do MPLS just for their own internal use. You know, I know some WISPs that they do a different MPLS tunnel back to their core for every access point. And so it's sort of like VLANs, except it can take advantage of more sophisticated, bit traffic engineering and, diverse routing and stuff versus just straight layer 2.
Yeah, so MPLS, they call it layer 2.5, right? Sort of above 2, but below 3, sort of in between the two of those. And also, you mentioned VLANs. VLANs is another instance where you might have to bump up your MTU, right? So if you're going across a link and they're trying to transmit 1,500 bytes across, and then you're putting a VLAN tag on it, you're technically adding additional overhead to that packet. So you need to account for that, right? So every little thing you do to it, if you're tunneling, say you're doing GRE tunneling, Ethernet over IP, MPLS, VPLS, VLAN tagging, all that stuff adds additional overhead. So you need to account for that. So if you can elevate your MTU across your network a little bit, usually by default, I try and go 1550 on my links. Just in case, even if I'm not doing it now, if I do it later and stuff starts acting squirrely, you know, I don't have to try and troubleshoot that because my default should technically be large enough to accept that stuff.
What's the default on MikroTik? I think it's like 1592. Let me check.
It I think
1598 is the default for bridge connections in MikroTik.
Yeah, MikroTik actually has a nice little wiki page. You search for MikroTik MTU. I think like the first result is a page they have that lists every product, every port number, and what its MTU is.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, because some products are lower, some products are higher.
Right, depending on the chipset they have and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think the CCRs are actually like 10,000 something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're 10,226. Most of them.
That's pretty spicy. So,
looks like some of the 1,009s are actually 10,224, so 2 bytes less. But
all right. So something else on the hardware while we're trucking along, moving fast as we can, because we're already 42 minutes in. MikroTik started selling CWDM muxes, which I think is and optics as well, right? And so. For everybody out there, it's coarse wave division multiplex, right? Versus DWDM, which we usually hear about, right? Dense wave division multiplex. And, you know, that's what the Ciena's and all the big boys are doing out there. Dense wave is where you take, say, one strand of glass or even two, and you just run it different frequencies of light, you know, or individualized connections, right? So theoretically, you can run over one strand of glass, you can run 80 connections. Right, so you can have 80 customers all carved up in their own light wave, running down that link. So CWDM does similar, but in course you can't do as many channels over glass. I guess they're dirtier or whatever. Somebody was telling me, and it may have been Thrift because he knows all of these things. He was saying something about how whenever they manufacture optics, they always manufacture DWDM optics, and when they test it, if it's too dirty to be dense wave, they say, okay, well, this is a coarse wave optic, and they throw it in that bucket. You know, so also know coarse wave is less susceptible to temperature variance. I found that out. So like with a dense wave optic, if it heats up, it changes, it can change the frequency that the light's transmitting on. So, you know, if you're out in a hut that's not air conditioned and that optic floats a little bit, it could cause problems, right? Whereas coarse wave is somewhat less susceptible. What are your opinions on MikroTik maybe splitting their attention onto other things in the market?
Yeah. So for me, I was like, why? Firestore does a great job. Why are they even bothering? But then, you know, most of the things we wait for out of MikroTik, most are software things. And so a software developer is not somebody developing hardware. Two totally different skill sets, you know, as different as a janitor and a software developer.
You totally offended all the hardware developers.
Most of them offend me, so it's okay. But then also, you know, this stuff comes out of China so cheap. Who'd say they even developed it? They just, yeah. You know, who'd say they didn't just find one of the OEMs and just say, hey, you know, let's just print this sticker for our logo and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah. And to that point, if you look at this equipment, it doesn't look like they reinvented the wheel. It looks like they just put a new sticker on the existing wheel. So to me, if they took something off the shelf from China and just threw a label on it and start selling it and they can, you know, make decent profit with little effort, why wouldn't you do that? You know?
But, and 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 they have a pretty wide distribution network, you know, as compared to most CWDM vendors. So it's probably easier for some of these people to get it from Microtik than from Fiberstore or someone like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we were looking up some of the pricing, and it didn't appear to be too crazy out of whack. So at least on the optics wise, I think Fiberstore is a little bit cheaper, but it wasn't like insane differences.
Let me ask you, would there be any incompatibility between vendors? Is that ever an issue?
I haven't seen that. I've heard people rumor about it, but
because I know some of the third-party ones, I forget which one I used, and it didn't work in a Microtik, just an SFP.
Oh,
then I got
a
Cisco, and it worked fine.
Yeah, I always get Cisco-coded optics, because most of my kit is Cisco, and if it's not, they always work in the Microtik. Cisco stuff does. So.
But I'm wondering if Microtik, if you buy an SFP or any plug-in device from Microtik, you know it's going to work.
It should, so anyway, right?
About that.
I've never had any problems plugging any SFP into Microtik stuff. I've had issues with Intel NICs, and then obviously Cisco, Brocade, so on. Most of the big iron vendors have will lock things down for them. But Fiberstore actually was coming out. Several of the companies have their own programming box. Fiberstore came out with theirs where you can, instead of ordering a Cisco optic, you order a generic optic. And then when you get it, you can program it to be whichever Cisco model you want to emulate, or Juniper, or Brocade, or Sienna, or Intel, so on.
But those programmers aren't cheap. But if you're programming, dozens of them, it makes sense.
Yeah. You could just, have one on the shelf and it's going to work with virtually anything because you could just code it and slap it in.
Right. Yeah. It's a cheaper sparing.
Mm-hmm. So while we're talking about fiber, I had added to the list, and it was something I ran into because I was having some fiber problems. So I do some stuff with a local university, and so it's like anything that passes onto their property, it becomes theirs, right? It's their sovereign territory. So they run all the cross connects, they do all the fiber, all that stuff. So if I'm say cross connecting across their infrastructure, I basically kindly ask them for something, and then occasionally I need to locate it. Well, I kind of found myself having trouble locating a pair of fiber, so I picked up a VFL, visual fault locator. It's basically a flashlight with a laser in there. You put it on the end of the fiber, you turn it on and it flashes, and you can find the fiber. It's not complicated. It's not a very sophisticated piece of equipment, but it's a $20 thing that takes a couple of AA batteries that can save your ass when you're trying to locate fiber, or even if a break in fiber, right? So if you've got a coil of fiber and there's a really bright spot on one of the jackets, well, there's probably a break right there.
And so, I think that light is green light. Am I right or wrong?
Mine's red.
This
most
is
of them,
red.
Are, most of them are red because they're cheaper.
Yeah.
I think green stuff's more expensive. Green money, green. But yeah, most of those guys, for whatever reason, they have an ST connection on them for like a bayonet style fiber. So you can, for like $5 or $10, pick up a ST to LC adapter for your VFL and just plug it in and then stick your fiber in there and you're good to go. And that also sort of ties into the Ubiquiti Fiber PoE. I'm sure you guys knew about this thing. I was looking the other day for just a transceiver that would take in an SFP and then spit out a PoE port to me. Of course, the PoE out I needed was, AFAT, and this thing only does passive, but for the price, it's actually pretty good. And Ryan McAfee turned me on to that, so that was pretty cool. But I ended up using a hex PoE, I think, to get the job done so I could get that AFAT out. But then Mike, of course, chimed in and said, you could have always just used a regular transceiver, and then, or maybe it was Tom, I can't remember. We had Tom on the last podcast. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful Tom that I so dearly miss. He doesn't call me anymore. Doesn't write.
Tear.
love him and leave him. You know how he is.
Well, I think my Christmas present last year is what caused him to stop sending things to me. So,
was that the pallet of beer that showed up at his house? That?
Oh no, no, that was RF Elements.
Oh, okay.
No, I sent him like a little Trump 45 of a Christmas tree decoration.
Oh. As everyone knows, he's a big Trump supporter. So,
I just like to annoy Tom from time to time, and I know that would do it, so I did it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I think Tom was just telling me, why not just get a PoE, like a passive PoE injector, and then split it back out at the other end? I said, well, because I didn't think of that at the time, and so that's why I didn't do that.
It's like $10 for, I think, the different parts he was talking about.
I know. I actually have probably 10 of those sitting in the trunk of my car right now that I could have used, so... Yeah, too little, too late. But while we're talking about MikroTik, this is a very MikroTik heavy episode. They've a lot of security stuff lately. As everyone should know, update your MikroTik. They uncovered what, Mike? A new vulnerability all the way up to 642 in Winbox. So if your Winbox was open to the internet, people could take advantage of you, either steal all of your passwords, or the new fun one they're doing is MikroTik CoinHive crypto jacking. So what are they doing? They're injecting a PHP page, I think, into your browsing, which mines coins in there. Is that what's happening? It was like 200,000 MikroTiks exploited.
Yeah, well, it started with 73 in Brazil. It was discovered by the Twitter name MalwareHunterRR, and then it was picked up by some other bigger security company. Now it's over 200,000 worldwide that have been compromised. Yeah, they're just crypto mining on your processor. Which that's applause to them, man. That's pretty nifty. And the only thing they're really mining is the Merino coin, which I don't know why, but they're doing Merino. They must have a reason. And it uses the MikroTik 0-day vulnerability. I don't know exactly what they inject. They have it on the let me see. I think I have the page up here.
I know some people that contacted me because they were exploited, and they said that there was a scripted fetch going on in their router that was pulling down a page called MikroTik.php. So it might be related to that somehow, I assume. Probably is.
No, that was for the one where it steals all your passwords.
Oh, Lord.
This one is something different. The crypto one is something different. Actually, one of my routers got nailed.
Shame. Ring the bell.
But the cool thing is that I block all international subnets, minus a few here and there from my international customers. So the code was injected into the router, but it couldn't download the file because it was on an offshore server. So I kind of, you know, they weren't able to download that code. Thank God I caught it and secured everything.
The first customer of mine that was exploited was in Estonia, I think. And he was like, hey, did you log into my router? And I was like, dude, I haven't been in there in months. And I was like, what IP did it come from? An IP in Taiwan. I was like, no, dude, it wasn't me.
Hey, how do you say 12 months in Estonian?
You got me, dude.
People are going to Google it, YouTube it, and it's awesome. Go YouTube it after. I think you'll like it.
Ridiculous. Let's see what else. Something I thought was interesting is MikroTik started a security blog. blog.mikrotik.com. Who knew?
And apparently they started it in March and just never told anybody about it until like last week. and I'm fairly certain that there are no new vulnerabilities. It's just new exploits on the existing vulnerabilities that people aren't patching.
They keep cropping up.
Per that blog post, version 6.29 through 640.8 on bug fix, or 642.1 on current. Those numbers include the fixes. So anything after that should be fine. Unless
I don't know. I was on 6.42 and I found that MikroTik.php file in my
42.0 or 42.1.
No, wait. 6.420.
642.1 is the one that has the fix.
Okay. There you go.
Sucker.
It's but then there is that, you know, that's the one that has the you know, password database, mm-hmm. you know, theft. So if they get in and steal your passwords and then you upgrade but don't secure it, yeah. they can still log in because yeah. they already have
your password. They still have your password. I need to get like a soundboard of Thomas just saying to put firewall rules in place to prevent access to your router. That's what he says every time. Or it's what he types every time, I guess.
Well, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. I VPN'd. I set up a LTTP VPN to all my routers, and I'm going to be doing that with all my customers coming soon. That's just going to take a long time because Nick Arellano does it himself, and it's an excellent idea. He has all of his MikroTiks VPN to SSTP to a central cloud-hosted MikroTik, and then when he wants to log into someone's Winbox, he just VPNs to the cloud-hosted MikroTik, then uses Routermon to populate his list of MikroTiks, and he just logs in that way. So it's completely secure, and each MikroTik, each end-user MikroTik, he has a rule that says only allow Winbox access to VPN interfaces. So it's pretty damn secure when it comes to Winbox access, because that's where the vulnerability seems to lie, in Winbox. So
I think they had one in their HTTP instance as well previously. Well,
if you have that open to the web, then you're a dope. Sorry, I just got to say that. You're a dope.
Well, I mean, at some point, somebody's going to be clever and, you know, go into somebody's network and then get internal access to that stuff. Because by default, it's open internally, you know? So. Yeah.
I turn all that shit off. But you know what? Shame on... I don't want to sound like a genius, because shame on me. One of mine got nailed, partially. But, you know, I think everybody can learn a little something from all these security exploits.
It happens to the best. It's like, I think every one of us has left the DNS... a resolver open inside of MikroTik to the internet, and then, you know, you become an amplification attack point. That's happened to me before. I caught it. I fixed it.
Yet I've had it once or twice when, you know, when I've done, you know, I've left some amplification, you know, vector open that I knew about. It's just didn't get to it or whatever. And then I'm struggling to figure out why the connection is broken, and then I'm like, why is this 200 meg connection trafficking 600 megs? Like, that could only be if it was UDP, because it doesn't care if it gets an ant. Oh no, what's going on? Fire up torch. Crap.
All right.
It's the Russians. It's all the Russians trying to hack our elections.
But we've hit the 1 hour mark, so we usually try and stick a fork in it. Let's see here. A couple of things. One thing I wanted to note is I need a VPN in the UK. So if anybody is in the UK and they want to do like reciprocal, I would be happy to allow you access to my VPN. I need to tunnel some traffic directly to the UK.
I got a customer in the UK. If you want, I can ask him. I got a good relationship with him.
All right, there you go. Or anybody that's listening here, just in case that one doesn't work out, hit me up. Let a brother know. I'm also making some cheap 24-volt PoE adapters. So the idea is, you know, when you're out in the field and you want to test with a radio or whatever, I'm making it so you can plug it into a USB booster pack and it'll spit out 24-volt and you can just PoE inject it and test. Because right now I'm doing it with a Ryobi flashlight. I rigged it, you know, like my, you know, it comes with like the drill and rechargeable battery. But I don't want to carry that thing around, and I always have the USB booster, so... make a couple of those. So if anybody's interested with the extras, I'm happy to send you one. I don't care.
Tell us where you're selling them, man. Plug it.
Well, I mean, I'm not making a bunch of them. I'm probably just going to make a tutorial. And then if I have some extras, you know, whatever, I'll throw them at people. I don't care.
Physically?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to let me wing it at your head. But, you know, if you can catch it, you can keep it. let's see. I think that's... that's all the actual things I have. Mikey, if people out on the internet want to get a hold of you, how would they go about doing that?
PayPal.com.
Just go to support@paypal.com.
That's how you can contact me, is send me some cash and I'll get back to you.
I think that's how prostitution works, right, Mike?
Whatever works.
It's not called prostitution money anymore. It's called hush money.
Was he Stormy Daniels over here?
I'll pay you hush money. Anyway.
All right, Davey. If people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
Easy. Just send me an email, david@pennytone.com.
And you do the VoIP stuff, right?
I do VoIP.
You do the phony things?
I do the hosted VoIP cloud. It's just it's funny. Whenever I tell somebody that, like, I don't know, I'm on a cycling team, and when they ask, oh, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I own a hosted VoIP cloud. And they're like, what? So I'm just like, okay, it's phone systems that use the internet.
The internet.
And I'm like, and then once I say that, they think like it's an app or software. So I'm like, all right, you know those Cisco phones that you see when you walk into a bank? Okay, I do that. And they're like, oh, okay, all right, I got it. So yeah, that's all I do is I do phone systems.
And you do custom polished optics, right? For telescopes?
Rub it on the nose. Oh, you mean for the telescopes? Yeah, here they are. I actually make optics for telescopes. And for those of you that know what the hell a telescope mirror is and how to measure them, I just made a 6-inch that's a 40th wave, a 4-inch that is a 30th wave, and I'm working on a 12.5-inch.
I wasn't impressed by the 6 and the 4, but the 12.5, you got me. You got me on that one.
Yep. Size does matter in optics.
It's a little bigger than average.
All right, so I am Greg Soule. If you want to find me, it's greg@gregsoule.com. You can hit my website. There's old content there that's cached and out of date. I need to start doing some updated stuff. I think I actually came up with a concept to do some really short microtig videos, just like some really just this very specific thing. Boom, boom, boom. Start pumping out some like 3-minute videos because I haven't done any in a long time, and I can at least commit myself to a 3-minute video as opposed to like an hour and a half video like I used to.
Greg, I've heard that you only commit to 3 minutes.
On a good day. And I'm doing math in my head. I'm thinking about baseball and my uncle. Let's see what else. I guess if you want to contact us, you can do that old school. Contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. You can also hit us on Facebook. Mikey's always posting up good content there. It's facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. He's also answering questions there constantly.
I just made the best post of all.
Oh,
I just
said,
secure your routers. That is all.
Pretty simple.
Tom's going to give it a thumbs up.
Also, get the get access to the Slack, the patron-only Slack. It's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Jump in there. Help support us. Buy us new equipment. And perhaps we can pay interesting people to get on here if you're sick of hearing us. If nothing else, questions, comments, please keep them coming. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being on, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
See you.